comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful planet we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Don't forget our free weekly newsletter. If you haven't subscribed yet, now's the time. There's no reason to, there's no justification for not getting something that's so free and so good, and there are no strings attached. So just go over to my website, KevinSmithShow.com, and subscribe. You'll see the link that says K-Files, all right? Tonight, as every night, we're going to journey into sort of uncharted waters. Tonight, we're going to be exploring the possibility of projection of consciousness or consciousness projection. Is it possible to project your consciousness into another place? Some people say yes, some people say no. Into another time, some say yes, some say no. But what about even into another person? Now, you know, some of the Native American traditions say that's possible. They project their consciousness, they say, into an animal and then see through the eyes of that animal. Well, is it possible to do that? And is it possible to do that with another person? My guest tonight is somebody that's been with us before on a number of occasions. And because there are so many facets to his life, we've talked to him about a number of things. My guest is Jeff Harvey. He, for instance, was formerly involved in top secret electronics for the U.S. Navy. And he's one of the people from whom Dr. Lear's team removed an implant. You remember the story, the implant that was actually transmitting on deep space frequencies. That's Jeff Harvey. He's also a remote viewer, and we've talked with him on a number of occasions in that capacity. Well, tonight, we're going to be talking about projecting consciousness. Is it possible? If it is, what's the benefit? And if it's possible and there's some benefit to it, how do you do it? What do you have to go through to be able to do that? Imagine what it would be like to be able to travel anywhere at any time and see events through someone else's eyes. And if you project your consciousness into someone else, if it's possible, how does that differ for them from being possessed? What does that imply about their own personal freedoms? Well, is it possible? We'll find out tonight when we talk with Jeff Harvey. And if it's possible, how does one develop the ability to do it? What are the benefits? And what's the difference between that and possession for the person to whom it's done? I'm not so sure I would want someone projecting themselves into my mind. We'll talk about it all when we come back, right after this.
Come on.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. As I stated, my guest this evening is Jeff Harvey. And I noticed, Jeff, during the break that I am minus something very important for this show.
Yes, it's my fault. I did not get out the show notes to you, and I apologize. No,
not that. I didn't have my hat on. My bald head was glaring in the camera.
Very good. I'm sorry I missed that.
Okay. I told folks during the first part of the show, the top of the show, that we're going to talk tonight about something having to do with projecting consciousness. I got a lot of questions about that, but it's as maybe for you it's not uncharted waters. For me, it's uncharted waters, and I've got a lot of questions about it. Describe for us, Jeff, first of all, your background related to this very quickly, though. I mean, how do you get into even thinking about projecting consciousness?
Right. It's an interesting topic because it's actually one of the most natural things we do, and everybody does it to a point. They just don't realize that's what they're doing. When I was a little boy, my dad started working with me when I was very young, around five or so. And he taught me some really interesting things to do with mind over matter and controlling your physiology with your mind. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, when you do that early, you tend to develop it much quicker because those are the years when you have accelerated learning. And consciousness projection is nothing more than putting yourself in another body or form by using your mind to do it. And it starts with your nervous system and your imagination, and then your nervous system takes over completely with your mind, and imagination no longer is part of it.
Okay. Describe for us, I know you've sort of described just a little bit here of what it means to project consciousness, but I mean, look, some of the Native American lore, talks about projecting the consciousness into an animal.
'70s, if you're that old. There was a lot of movies out that started to deal with consciousness projection. Now, people didn't realize that's what it was. They thought they used to term it ESP and psychic abilities, and it's literally got nothing to do with anything but your nervous system and your mind. In those movies, you would see a young Indian, he'd be standing on a hill, and an eagle would go by. And the next thing you would see is the view from the eagle looking down, and it was the young Indian who had projected his conscious mind into the eagle and was using the eagle's eyes as his own to be able to see what was down there. You're not controlling the body, but you're being able to accept the sensory input as if it was your own. And it's a conductive channel through your nervous system and right up into the vagus nerve in the brain and into the rest.
Okay, so in essence then, you're seeing with someone else's eyes.
Correct. And it's not an easy task to learn, but it's one that anybody can learn.
Okay. All right, now.
And I can teach that tonight.
Well, we'll get into that. I asked the question at the top of the show. Look, if you can project your consciousness into me, therefore you are receiving the sensory inputs that I'm receiving. So you're seeing with my eyes, you're hearing what I hear, you're smelling what I smell, etc. Two questions about that. Number one, how is that different from what is often described as possession?
Okay. I am not an expert in this field, especially in the field of possession, because I've never experienced it that I recall, and I have my doubts as to what is actually going on in it. Mm-hmm. Now, having said that, I'm not ruling out that there are entities or individuals that are strong enough to do something like that, but it would be a very weak mind that would be able to accept that, or a mind in a state where it had become weakened enough that that could happen.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. What would be the benefit of doing this?
If you were trying to do it to another individual?
Yeah, if you're trying to project your consciousness into someone else, what's the benefit?
To someone like me?
Yeah, to any of us.
Any time you do any action with your body, your brain, your nervous system, whatever, your mind,
mm-hmm.
your brain lays down cognitrons or pathways that the neurons fire through, and that's what helps you remember how to do it the next time. The next time after that, they get laid down even thicker and wider and a little stronger. They fire a little faster. The more and more you do this, the more and more you can do this, which is why, you know, we're doing a lot of the research that we're doing currently in telepathy and telekinesis and all of that. So the benefit to someone like me would be is to enhance my nervous system, to enhance my brain function, and perhaps open up new pathways or cognitrons in the brain that weren't heretofore open or hadn't been open since I was a child.
Okay, so you benefit by expanding
your mind and your brain in that way.
You benefit by expanding your mind. You benefit by expanding your abilities. But isn't that at the expense of the personal privacy of somebody else?
Absolutely it is. And let's talk about the ethics behind that.
Okay.
I've conducted a couple of experiments in public places with a couple of young folks, showing them how to do it. You know, the big question is always, okay, do you have the right to do that? Well, you don't realize it, but you're doing it all the time anyway. Many times when you, let's say you're sitting in a coffee shop, you're doing some work on your laptop or reading a book, and you happen to have a thought that comes across your mind, and you look up and you don't realize it, but you're staring at another human being. And what nobody seems to realize is that there are at least six different methods that you couple with another human being through the nervous system, through the mind, through the brain, through various different auditory channels. And so while you're looking up and you're still thinking about that book, you're staring at another person and you're coupling with them. And you don't realize that. So on an unconscious level, you're doing it all the time. And
well, now, wait a minute. Just because I look at someone doesn't mean that I'm projecting my consciousness into them.
Certainly does. You aren't projecting it consciously, but you're projecting your unconscious into them. And the only difference between the two is, are you actively attempting to reach into their nervous system and take a look at the sensory input or not? And that's the only difference between the two. And your ethics will determine on who you use to do that with. And if you're really smart, you'll have friends that you'll speak with and they'll allow you to do that. And that way it's two ways. They can work on you, you can work on them, and nobody has to have their privacy invaded. In the intelligence communities, I really don't think that those rules apply.
So are the intelligence communities already doing this?
There's no doubt in my mind, and that's, although I was not involved in those projects to my knowledge, there's absolutely no doubt about it. I mean, if you look at the remote viewing work that they did originally, much of that is consciousness projection.
And you are a remote viewer, and you're trained by one of the people that was in that original program.
Correct.
Okay. Now, what if I don't want someone looking inside my mind and projecting their consciousness into me? Is there a way for me to protect myself from that?
All right. Now, here's where it gets interesting. And I have some information that's solid and other that I suppose. So let's go over the solid parts. When I was a young boy and I realized that these things were possible, of course it appeared to me that somebody could do that to me. And I thought, well, you know what? I think I need to do some blocking work. And I talked to my dad a little bit, and we discussed it. And he said, yeah, you can put up walls and do blocks and things. And so what I wanted to do was I wanted to see if I could block my dad. Because if there was somebody out there stronger in the mind than he was, I didn't know who they were. So I did, and I was extremely successful, which might have caused a little of the enmity between us later on. But, you know, of recent last 2 or 3 years, or 4 years, they've actually targeted me with remote viewing, and these are some of the best, and they were only able to get steel walls when they viewed me. Then they had some psychics try to do it, and they got exactly the same thing. So I was able to put up walls and blocks. The only bad news is if I need to go in and dig at some things way, way back, I got to figure out how to take them down, and I don't remember how I put them up, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I suspect how I did it, but I'm not positive.
When you say they have targeted you with remote viewing, who are they?
Some of the folks in our remote viewing class actually did that because when we came to the class, of course, they wanted to get to know who was coming to class, and of course, they did a quick session on all the participants.
Okay. So then I want to go back to a question about what benefit is it? I mean, really, what benefit, other than it's just fun to do and it's cool to be able to say you can do it, what benefit is there to be able to do this?
All right, let's look at it from the intelligence gathering perspective. All right, let's say you're in a small town, you've got a dirty cop, and you need some data to help you have your investigators go and dig up some of the dirt on him so that you can get this guy drug out of the court system so he's not affecting people anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a great use of that particular one. Mm-hmm. Let's say you've got a local politician who's really dirty and you want to make sure that you get them taken out of the system. Great use for that. Those are the kind of good uses that are clandestine for intelligence gathering that would be very good. I've used remote viewing before I went into an interview with someone to discuss things with them. And the way I would do it is I would use the S4s, which are basically they're signal bursts. And when you do remote viewing, you're connecting the pen to paper with your nervous system and your mind. And so you get bursts of words and data, and you just fill them into whatever columns they belong in, like, let's say, color, taste, temperature, sounds, and then you go into other fields where emotional words are crop up or things that are solid, like ground, dirt, box, or indescribable words, like intangible words, like gripping or something like that. They're not quite tangible. So you would go ahead and fill those in, and then what I would do is after the end of a session, I would look at those words, and I would see the ones intuitively that would be most likely to lead me down the road to where the secrets are. And then you can do further sessions to target that word and see what else is attached to that word, other feelings, places, events, and that's how you can do those things. So if you're using consciousness projection and you can develop it to a fine enough art, you may be able to short-circuit that process quite quickly because it's 45 minutes a session at least when you're doing a remote viewing.
Okay, now this consciousness projection, I mean, you've described for us a couple of benefits that, you know, if you were trying, for instance, to get the information necessary on a dirty cop or a dirty politician, the necessary information to have them legally removed from their position. I understand that. On the other hand, in the hands of a person with less than honorable intent, wouldn't this be rather dangerous?
Absolutely. But it's just like anything else. A stone at the ground at your feet is dangerous in the wrong hands. You got to remember, you can't cut off what's here already and say, oh, well, we can't have that out there. Because the bottom line is, it's out there. So you just have to deal with it just like you would deal with a bully down the street with a brick.
Who's got the brick, the bully or me dealing with him?
Oh, he would hope he had a brick. He'd really not want to do that with you.
Okay, now for the general population, though, what's the benefit to the general population? Somebody, they're not doing intel. The benefit to them?
Population's benefit would be, I see one thing as being really a problem today, and that's the disconnectedness of people from each other because they're utilizing things like porn on the web and television to supplant real-life relationships to help build the trust between each other and the understanding of each other. And the way I look at it is anything that can help you couple with another person and on a peaceful plane is a good thing for the populace.
Do you not see that this could also, instead of helping us couple with other people or bond with other people at a peaceful level, it could also possibly create some real fights over invasion of privacy?
Sure. And just like when the very first bullet was designed to go out and get game, there's going to be fights over it too. You know, it doesn't matter what's out there. There's always going to be fights over it. The dust will settle after people agree on how to do things and how not. But until they've got a reliable method of detecting whether or not it's going on, there is no argument that's going to hold water.
Okay. Now, I fully understand where you're coming from, and in the main, I agree with it. Guns don't kill people. People kill people. And if you take all the guns away, they'll use rocks. You know, the very first murder ever recorded, for those who believe in the Judeo-Christian scriptures, was when Cain killed Abel, and he did it with a rock. So he didn't have a gun. And we so far haven't licensed rocks or outlawed rocks. So I understand, you know, if someone wants to kill someone, they will find a way, and it doesn't matter what weapons you have around or don't have around, they will still find a way. I understand that. Okay. Now, having said that, do you think that the proliferation, now, let me tell you, I'm going to ask the question and then we're going to have to cut away for break. But I want to answer to this when we come back from break. Do you think that proliferation of this art or skill or technology or however you want to term it, do you think that will lead to a better world? We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Jeff Harvey. Now, Jeff, when we went away for break, I had asked a question. And the question was, the proliferation of this art, skill, technology, or however we wish to term it, and I'll let you define it in just a moment, but the proliferation of it, having lots of people around the planet being able to do this, does it make the world a better place, or does it make it less peaceful? Does it make it less safe?
I think I'm going to answer it a little different way. And I'm going to answer it first by saying how difficult it is right now. We all know about the Clementine satellite system up there beaming the low-frequency waves down to interrupt your sleep cycle so that you can't astrally project and do some of these things. But you can do them anyway with plenty of work, and you can get it done. So my answer is initially there would be a couple of things. You're going to see, for Joe Sixpack and the folks who aren't really, how should I phrase this? They're not really interested in anything outside of their little box and comfort zone, so things like this wouldn't appeal to them anyway. So, of course, they're going to feel imposed upon, they're going to feel left out of the group, and there'll be a lot of arguments over it. I think initially there'd be some degree of chaos, and then that would certainly peter out just like every other situation has, and would become an accepted part of dealing with other human beings exactly the same as speaking in another language. And first of all, it wouldn't be anything you could promulgate planet-wide, because this is not something most people are even interested in, let alone believe it's possible.
Well, generally speaking, I would say that's true. However, we are talking right now and are going to be continuing to talk to people in about 143 nations. Now, obviously, we're not talking to all the people in those 143 nations, but this one show will constitute a proliferation of it.
Correct.
Okay. So is that going to make the world better, worse, or have no real impact?
In my estimation, certainly better, because obviously the people who hear about it tonight and learn how to do it and practice it and have some good results are going to be telling their friends and neighbors and those who are actually interested in this sort of thing, and it will proliferate. It may be a 1-to-3 ratio, it may be a 3-to-1 ratio, it may be a 10-to-1 ratio, or a 1-to-10, who knows. But it will proliferate, and people will try it and practice it, and those who get good results will talk more about it. And over the course of a few years, even just one small show doing it to that many countries is going to have an impact. But I personally believe that if people do more things to become more connected, we can't but help have a better planet. It's like when I was trained in remote viewing, it had said, you know, you got to remember that, you know, there's a lot of folks out there that won't do this, but those who do will expand new parts of their brain and learn what they can do. And it's the same with this. Not everyone will, but those who do are going to enjoy it, they're going to work more at it, and they're going to develop more. What's really exciting is let's say you've got two adults who meet, fall in love, and have children, and they have really worked on expanding their consciousness and doing these things. Can you imagine what the child will be like?
Yeah, but I can also imagine what it's like when a few years down the road, this husband and wife who do love each other, both of them have aged, both of them have put on weight, and a really good-looking young lady walks past, and the wife views what he views like he views it. I can see the divorce rate going up.
I'd be willing to bet you they've already had all of those conversations a long time before that.
Maybe.
Because he has seen her look at a gentleman and say, oh, gosh, he's really cute. And they've probably had many talks about those things. I don't think you're going to see it quite that nasty.
Yeah, but the point of it, I'm not being trite. The point of it, the point of what I was pointing out there, not to be trite about it, is that it does bring about the ability for people to do consciousness projection will bring about new sociological challenges.
You bet. But remember, if the global elite have no secrets we can't ferret out, we now have a weapon in helping the rest of the planet thwart a lot of their plans.
Do the global elite have the ability to do this stuff already?
Wouldn't doubt it, and I think they've had it for at least 60 or 100 years. Because remember, a lot of this work was being done way back in the 1800s. You know, you got Annie Besant and some of the folks like that that were doing these things, and they were playing with this stuff a long time ago.
Okay. What should we call, how should we classify consciousness projection? Is it a skill? Is it a technology? Is it a science? Is it just an ability? What is it?
It's an innate ability within the human organism that is part of all of us. Whether or not you have a propensity towards it is about the same as whether or not you're a good writer or whether you're a good gardener. You know, maybe you're best at left brain things like analysis versus being right brain where you're good at painting. So some people would be better than others at it, but everyone has the ability.
All right. Let's talk about... let me ask you this, and then we'll talk about how does a person go about developing this ability. But let me get into this just a little bit here before we hit this next break. Have you actually done this consciousness projection and knowingly? And if so, describe a consciousness projection session that you did, a specific session, and what you got out of it.
Sure. I was in a coffee shop near the area where I live. There are a couple of young folks that were next to me, and we were discussing this, and they wanted to know how to do it, so I taught them. And it basically works like this. You take a look at someone who you want to use as, let's call them a target for right now. They're a lot more than that. They're more of a partner than they are a target. So you choose the target, which is the person you're interested in partnering with, and basically what you do is you take a look at what they see in front of them, and this is how you work your way into this. This isn't how a natural would do this, but this is how you could learn it if it's not natural for you. So you see what that person is seeing around their area. Then what you do is you basically... You should close your eyes and reach out with your nervous system or your consciousness and go to that person and try and feel what it's like to be in that body from their position, what they would see, the people nearby them. And what you'll start out with is really fuzzy images, unless your nervous system's really tuned up. But the first time you'll see fuzzy images, but what will happen is over time, those images sharpen up quite a bit. Now, you're going to know when you've succeeded when you are able to see maybe the book they're reading in front of them, and then you break out of your projection session, and you walk past the table, and you look at the book and see if it's exactly what you saw. If it is, now you know you're able to do this, and now you can start developing it because you put together something that's very important, a cognitron pathway to teach your brain how to get there again. But more importantly, you've actually formed a pathway that can be traveled again and again and again, and your brain now knows it can do it, and it knows what it feels like to go there.
Okay, but what I asked was, describe one that you actually did so that we can sort of live through it with you.
That's what I did do, but let me be more graphic.
All right.
When I was discussing this with these two young folks and I told them how to do it, I was doing it as I talked to them.
Okay.
I'm able to split my consciousness between looking out from that person at the people around me, and I was able to see their faces in much better detail than just blurry images, and I was able to see the colors, see the things they were wearing, that sort of thing. So it was a neat experiment in that I was teaching two other people how to do this, and then we shared feedback between each other. Now, the feedback is probably the most important thing in this, because when you go and look to see if you were correct in what you were looking at, your brain gets immediate feedback, just like we do in remote viewing training, because that is what lays down the really good cognitron pathways. So when I was doing that with these fellows and the gals that were next to us, we all did this experiment, and different people got different things, but I had very clear, crisp images of the people right around the person I was looking through. What was interesting to note, though, was they weren't aware.
Are there cases where people will be aware that something's going on like this?
I can't imagine there would not be.
Would you be aware if someone was doing it to you?
I'm sorry?
Would you be aware if someone were doing it to you?
I've been aware of attempts to probe me on a couple of occasions. I'm not as sensitive as I need to be a human Gauss meter, which is what it really is, because when they reach into your nervous system, that's sympathetically going on all the time when you're talking with people. To what an extent determines what your reaction is. We've all, as men, we've meet someone, maybe it's an attractive woman, and there's an immediate connection that you feel before you even have a conversation. And the both of you feel it, you can see it in the eyes, and you know it's there. But that's the nervous system, pheromone chemicals that are causing that.
Is that different or is that the same as projecting consciousness?
It's partially the same. Chemical pheromones, when you're doing remote viewing or consciousness projection, you're trying to block that because pheromones can train wreck a session because they're so powerful that they literally will reorient the direction that you want to be focused on. So only very disciplined remote viewers can block that sort of thing. And pheromones are a localized thing. You're not going to remote view something across the state and be affected by pheromones, but in a local coffee shop or a movie theater or some small combined space like that, you're going to notice pheromones.
When you are projecting your consciousness into someone else, okay, I understand you see what they see, but do you sense everything they sense?
I do not yet. I wouldn't doubt there are those who have developed those capabilities by now. Because if they've been working on this as long as I suspect they have, I'm sure they've got some really tuned up people, and they usually choose bloodlines that have this going on in them.
What role would bloodlines play?
Well, remember we were talking about how two different people might be wired differently. One's more...
Jeff, I shouldn't have asked that question because we have a break taking over. We'll pick up there when we come back, though. We'll be back, ladies and gentlemen, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Jeff Harvey, and we're talking about this the topic of being able to project one's consciousness into somebody else. Jeff, during the break, a question occurred to me, and I want to pursue that before we get into something else. This question, doesn't this constitute a violation of the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution here in the United States for an illegal search and seizure if it were used by law enforcement?
Well, law enforcement will twist it whatever way they feel is necessary to get the desired outcome. In my estimation, three-quarters of law enforcement today is basically corrupt, so they could twist it any way they want. The Fourth Amendment, though, if you look back to what the Founding Fathers had designed, they are talking about basically physical search and seizure.
Well, no. It also applies to your telephone conversations. It applies to your email. It applies even, let me tell you something. When you go to the airport and you opt out of that scan because you don't want to be exposed to the radiation or you don't want somebody to see you naked, so you opt out of the scan, then they're going to do a pat-down. Now, that pat-down that they're going to do, if a police officer did that to you and you were not already under arrest and charged with a crime, that pat-down itself is a crime. No police officer, no police officer, I want to underscore that, not a single police officer in the United States of America could do that kind of pat-down unless you were already under arrest and charged with a crime. So it's the most serious, felonious pat-down there is, okay? And allegedly protected, we're protected against that by the Fourth Amendment. And by the way, while I'm taking a shot at that, I'm using it as an example, but I saw the former director of the TSA talking about it on television when it first started being done and everybody was in an uproar. And he said, we don't like having our Fourth Amendment rights violated, but unfortunately it's going to have to be that way. So he even admitted that it's a violation of the Fourth Amendment. Now, but that Fourth Amendment protects us. Well, it doesn't. It's a moot point because Congress does not recognize the Constitution any longer. But it's supposed to protect us against the agents of the government searching us, our papers, our houses, and effects.
Well, what's interesting is you've just revealed prima facie evidence that this person should be arrested and put in jail because he admitted what they're doing is illegal. Now, let's take it to the next step. They're doing this on private property.
Yeah, and being TSA, they are agents of the government as well. But the issue is the Fourth Amendment as pertaining to projecting my consciousness into someone else. If the person doing the consciousness projection is an agent of the government, under the Fourth Amendment, number one, there has to have been a felony committed. Number two, they have to have sworn out a warrant in which they state what felony is committed, what evidence they're looking for, why they believe that evidence is in the possession of this person, and specifically where this search is to take place and why they believe that evidence is there. All that must be sworn in an affidavit to the judge, and they must an officer must raise his hand in front of the judge and swear that's true. Okay, now, with consciousness projection, they could do it, people wouldn't even know it, and they're gathering evidence on you.
That is correct. And let's say you happen to be a remote viewer and a consciousness projection expert, and you are good enough and well-tuned enough to where you can pick up thoughts from the person. And this person happens to be thinking about where they stashed the cocaine from the last deal they did. And it happens to be like many drug dealers do. They bury it under the, I get a kick out of this. If you go to the bridges around the cities, a lot of them will dig holes in the dirt down at the bottom of the embankments to the bridges, and they'll bury their drugs there and go get them when they need them. Mm. So let's say that's where you buried it. And the person that's remote viewing you or doing a projection technique picks up on that, and they realize, well, there's only three bridges in this city, and, gee, it looks like that one, the picture I got quickly, and they go dig it up and they get it. Now they've got it. How are they going to, in a court of law, state to the judge and the jury, well, the reason I found this was because this is a very long way out before this will even be accepted as a possibility, let alone a commonplace occurrence.
Well, having been in law enforcement, you know, my assessment, I know your opinion is that I think you said 2/3 or 3/4, something like that, of law enforcement today are corrupt. My assessment would not be that. My assessment would be that probably 90% are not corrupt. Not necessarily 90% are competent, but 90% are not corrupt. But you don't have to have a large percentage who are corrupt for this to if they have this ability. You don't have to have a very large percentage. Even 1% could absolutely decimate the criminal justice system. So, the reason I point that out, I'm not against it. The reason I point it out is that anything that, as you say, it's out there. Okay, so it's out there. That means that sooner or later, some of these corrupt people who happen to be cops or prosecutors or whatever will access it. They'll begin to use it. And so we need to know about it. We need to be able to protect ourselves by also knowing how you do this. But sooner or later, it will happen. And, you know, there's a new report out about prosecutorial misconduct that is not disciplined. And there was it's a study that was done by the government. And there's a massive amount of prosecutorial misconduct taking place in this country every day. A massive amount of it, according to government reports. How can this help us to protect ourselves from that, even though sooner or later some of these guys are going to use it?
Well, I'm of the opinion, and again, it's just my opinion, the more tuned up you get your nervous system, the more aware about life you are, those who you deal with, and I think the really honest people inside will become more honest, more open, more to the point, and much more direct in their communication with others. To me, those are all good things. It's one of those things where the more advanced or educated you become, the more value and benefit you become to those around you. I learned naturopathic medical practices, and I teach them to people. I teach them how to do all kinds of different things, consciousness projection being one, remote viewing being another. I've taught remote viewing, I've taught consciousness projection, I've taught cancer reversal, you name it. So I think the more education you get that's widespread but plays to your strong suits, the more value will be to those around you. And I think that's all we're really after here, I would think.
Can this be done to a target that's sleeping?
Absolutely.
So then what do you see?
You know, I've been doing dream state work since I was 7 or 8, and that movie Inception is 100% reality. You can literally invite people into your dream state, and the next day you can talk about what went on in the dream while you're across town from each other. These are not things that are impossible. These are things that are being done a lot. The problem is that in order to get good at this, your nervous system's got to be cleaned up. Your diet has to be mainly plant-based, even though you can get away with some meat and fish and poultry. You need to be very plant-based because evidently the plants that you eat carry certain enzyme constructs that help your nervous system be much more active and be able to do these things. So, yeah, you could use this to target dream states very well.
Okay, we are going to have to step away for a break. And when we come back, shortly after we come back, I'll open the phone lines and let you join the conversation. We'll be back right after this. Thank you. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Jeff Harvey. Those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. So sorry you missed the first hour. But if you are a member at the Kevin Smith Show, you can pick that first hour up by either watching the latest show or listening to the latest show. Those go up online within about 2 hours after the show each night. Jeff, in talking about this this consciousness projection, we were talking about whether it's possible for you to project your consciousness into a target that's sleeping. And you said yes. Now, you told us on a previous show, on a couple of previous shows, you've told us about how when you were a kid, you would dream about playing a baseball game or throwing a baseball with a buddy of yours, and the next day you and your buddy could talk about having done that because both of you dreamed the same thing. Okay, was there any sort of prearrangement between you and your buddy in this?
No, and that was, you know, in those days, I wasn't really interested in this sort of thing. I just happened to have it happen spontaneously. I didn't realize I had those abilities. They just they became less latent, let's phrase it. There was no prearrangement.
Okay, so that means a person could enter my dream state even if I didn't want them there.
I think that that's possible. I have not tried that with anyone yet. And the reason why I think that it's possible, because what I would do is when I would go into the dream state, I would invite that person in. What was interesting, though, is they would appear on the edge of a fog in the ball field, and they would just appear there, standing there. And then I'd invite them to play baseball, or softball, excuse me. And so we would go and play. But they initially appeared standing there just like they would in real life, and I'm not sure if that standing there was them reaching out to me or if that was out to them to invite them in. And that's a part that I have not learned yet. So when I have a better opinion, I'll fill you in on that one.
All right. Can this be – can consciousness projection be used for me to see what a person is going to do, what their intentions are? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm thinking about how I want to respond to this because you're asking about precognitive abilities. And you're actually talking about something that's a little more advanced than what we're discussing here.
No, I'm talking about if a person is sitting there thinking, all right, as soon as I finish this cup of coffee, I'm going to go over to so-and-so's house and whip his rear end. He's thinking about it. So would I be able to pick up on that?
I thought you were asking a different question. Yeah, that's absolutely possible because in remote viewing, a lot of what we do with our nervous system is we reach out to the matrix to pull the data. Some of my coupling training that I've taught basically states that we're not just using the, whatever you call it, the matrix, the Akashic record. We're actually reaching into another person's nervous system when we couple with them, and that can get you that sort of information. Because in remote viewing, we would pull the bursts down that come from that, and they would just pop up as random words. But when you put them together in the order you got them in the fields, they build a picture or a pattern that tells you what they're thinking. So, yes, that's entirely possible. You can do a deep state mind probe on somebody and go way down in there to see how they really think about something or someone.
And you say this is something everybody can do.
Pick up on something they're thinking.
You say this is something everyone can do, right?
Absolutely, if they train. Some people do it very naturally without any training.
Okay. How difficult is it to tell us how you do this?
2.5 minutes.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
All right, let's do the tune-up first on how to get your nervous system tuned up. All right, every joint on your body, fingers, toes, ankles, elbows, shoulders, hips, they all have minor energy portals on them. You've heard of things called meridians in Chinese medicine. Well, it's similar to that. All right, if you take your finger and you put your left hand out in front of your face, and you take your right finger, and on your thumb at the first knuckle next to the fingertip, you draw a little swirl on the knuckle going from right to left and around in a circle. Then you do the next knuckle, next, 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 just a little quick circle on them. And you're doing all the middle knuckles now. And then you do all the back knuckles on the left hand. Now when you hold your hand up, the left hand, you're going to feel a very light pulsing or buzzing sensation in it. And that's your nervous system ramping up to handle a lot more energy flow through it. Well, if you do that with your feet, your hands, your elbows, and all those joints, now you got your nervous system vibrating all over the place, and it's highly active. Next, you can do your amygdala and use it to stimulate your frontal lobes, which do a lot of this reach-out work and the advanced things that your brain can do, like psychokinesis, telepathy, and those things.
Okay, tell people what is their amygdala.
All right, I'm going to go over that. The amygdala is a part of the brain where if you look at where your temples are on each side and the back end of the temple and you go in 1 inch, there's a little fingertip-sized lobe called the amygdala. And it is the switch or transfer point to activate your frontal lobes, which are across your entire forehead. So if using your mind instead of your finger to stroke the amygdalas, and it's called cognitive imaging, and the way you can practice that if you just want to learn how to do that is just focus on a place on your leg with your mind and feel a little tingle there. And as you feel that tingle, start moving it up and down the leg slightly with your mind. You'll do the same thing when you tickle the amygdala using your brain, and it's called cognitive imaging. Now, what you'll do is you envision where those amygdalas are, 1 inch in on each side from the temples, and you push with the energy from the amygdalas out to your forehead, and you do it repeatedly for a couple of minutes. That tunes up your nervous system and your brain to have all the sections that do this sort of thing functioning at peak. Then you would go, and if you wanted to do a consciousness projection with someone, you can do it a couple of different ways. One way is to have a recent picture of them and picture what they look like in your mind and reach out to them. And while all those nerve endings are tingling, you focus on them. And then you focus on being inside of them in that picture. And that's how you can couple to them. Now, if you're talking about doing it while they're in dream state, you would be awake. You'd be laying in bed, perhaps, or in your easy chair. And you would project yourself to that person, saying their name, looking at their picture, and trying to reach out to them with your nervous system. That's the how of how you would attempt this. And if you get a couple of friends together and you do this at a specified time where you prearrange it, then you can talk the next day and jot down your notes on what you got or call each other afterwards. Now let's say you want to do it even more power. You get three people with you, and you do this to a fourth, where the three focus on the one. Because any time you take that brain power and mind power and you put that together, it increases your ability of contacts, you know, many-fold, a lot more than threefold. And the reason we know this works is because many people in remote viewing have done consciousness projection work with a group of nine in a little circle, and they focus on one individual, and that's how they reach in. And once you're able to do that and that person feels what it's like, their brain recognizes that much more easily the next time it happens. So if somebody's looking to tap on you and project in, you'll be able to feel it much sooner because you'll recognize what that feeling was like.
Okay. So how many times does a person have to practice this before they recognize that they, bingo, I've done it?
Everybody's different, and I'll tell you the differences. You know my work in homotoxicology where we do detoxification of people with, you know, autoimmune disorders. Mm-hmm. Well, it turns out that that's exactly the same thing you do to get somebody cleaned up, to train them to do these things, because you need the cell membranes to be clean of the toxins to get messaging in. So my recommendation is, and most of the people that come to me on this are practitioners that are already doing a lot of this right brain work, and they're pretty clean. They've cleaned up their diets. They've cleaned up their systems. They've detoxed a few times. And now function at a much higher level than the average person who's, you know, eating Big Macs and garbage food.
All right. I am fairly certain that out across America, all across Canada, the UK, all across Europe, all across Africa, Australia, and Asia, there are a few folks who have a question or two for you or a comment or two and would like to participate in our discussion. So I want to open up the telephone lines and invite you, if you wish to ask a question or make a comment, to do so. Ladies and gentlemen, the main number here in the studio is 623-444-5889. Let me give it to you again, 623-444-5889. The toll-free number in the USA and Canada is 888-223-4599. And if you can call us without it costing you long distance, please use the main number, 623-444-5889. If you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, we have the flash message option on the website. And this is only for people who are outside of the USA and outside of Canada, because I don't have a toll-free number for out there, okay? If you wish to participate in the show, you can either call us at 623-444-5889 from anywhere in the world, or if you're outside of USA and Canada and you don't want to make the international long-distance call, you can use the flash message feature, and we'll be more than happy to read what you have to say. Okay, let's go to the telephone and caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller. Well, I see the telephone number. We are connected, but the caller is not there. Okay, let's try it again. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin, this is Rusty from Michigan.
Hello, Rusty.
Hi. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, how are you, Rusty?
Very good. Now, with this projecting consciousness, I've messed around with the astral travel and the remote viewing, and I've done, you know, been able to do, have some success with it, but the problem seems to be getting to do it at will. Is this the same order? I mean, it seems like, you know, like when you're in between dream states and stuff, you can do the astral travel better, and the remote viewing is a matter of, you know, practice. Is this going to take just as long to perfect as the remote viewing and the astral travel?
Well, remote viewing is much easier than being able to, because it's more skill-based. It takes a standard part of your ability set, and you're just practicing it to get really good at it and be able to do it more efficiently. And obviously, if you're trained by some of the majors out there, you will know that your thinking and imagination are two things that are not allowed in remote viewing. Otherwise, you get bad data. Whereas in astral projection or out-of-body experiences, they are totally right-brained and they're free-flowing. You rarely will jump in there and try and manipulate it like you would do in the movie Inception.
where you're in a dream state, you realize you're in a dream state, and now you're controlling that projection because you know it's your own mind projecting it, and you're just controlling the physics, the dreamscape, and what happens. So
all right.
Remote viewing, much easier to do and much easier to get really great at will, but astral projection takes a lot of work. And there's a couple of books that'll teach you how. One is by William Buhlman, B-U-H-L-M-A-N, and the other one is by Robert Bruce. The first one is Adventures Out of the Body, I think is the title. That's by Buhlman. And the other one is Astral Dynamics by Robert Bruce. Those two books are extremely good. The Buhlman book is a fabulous read early on, and then it gets dry towards the end. The Robert Bruce book is more of a how-to manual on how to learn to tune up the body. But before you do that, if you want to get really good quickly, clean up your system and do detox so your nervous system is really firing on all cylinders.
Rusty, did you have another question or comment?
Yes, I have one more.
Go ahead.
That's Matt, Kevin.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Go ahead,
I just can hardly hear you, sorry. With this projected consciousness, have you used it to, like, for health reasons for another person to help them, say they had a disability? Do you foresee it being a help in healing people's bodies?
I do, and I'll tell you two reasons for that. When I taught everybody a few minutes ago how to use cognitive imaging, I did on another show how you do that tune-up procedure with the hands, and then you move that vibration that you feel up and down the arms, through the chest, up the back, down the arms, and all around. And the better you get at moving that with your mind, the better you're able to target, let's say, your pancreas or your kidney or your liver. And many of the energy healers today that do this sort of work, and there are thousands of them, that's exactly what they do. They use the energy and their consciousness projection to reach in and find out what's wrong and to move the chi energy to it or away from it so it unblocks it. It's nothing more than meridian work and energy work in the various organs and glands to try and make them healthier or function better. So, yeah, it's already being done.
Already. And one more, and I'll listen off air. Does this have anything to do with star children? And I'll take the answer off the air.
I would think that group of children probably from birth has been well-versed in this sort of thing. Now, the diligent parent probably start them at the age of 3 working on tuning up the portals and getting them so that they can really do a lot of it. That's if it was my child at the age of 2 or 3, I'd be teaching them at that.
You and Rusty were talking about astral projection versus remote viewing, but now let me ask you, how is projecting your consciousness different from astral projection?
Well, consciousness projection is where you're consciously in the waking state trying to move your consciousness into another person, a plant, a tree, an animal, whatever. Astral projection is when you are just on the edge of dream state and you're able to project yourself out of your body to another locale. And most of the time you wind up on a different dimensional plane, in my opinion, because it's not actually the same one. Or if it is this plane, there's a distortion somehow that changes the features of things, like the color of your neighbor's couch or the wall or whatever. So astral projection is typically done on the edge of dream state, whereas consciousness projection is typically done in full waking state in high alpha.
Which one would be the more useful and powerful?
Oh, I don't know there's an answer for that. Astral projection for me makes me happier than I can tell you. I enjoy it. I love it. It's better than the most entertaining movie I've ever seen. Nothing in life has compared to it yet. However, consciousness projection, if I were able to perfect it, which I'm hoping I will, to the point where I can literally enjoy feeling the sensory input from another individual with their full knowledge I'm doing it, and being able to try and connect with them on a much deeper level. Let's say this is your girlfriend or your wife or, you know, your lover. I can't imagine a more interesting way for two people to come together and communicate than, oh, say, perhaps making love with them while you're doing this with each other. So I have not experienced that level, but I fully believe that if I did that, more than likely I'd appreciate that more than astral travel.
All right, I'm going to ask you a question that I'll just tell you that there's a reason for what I'm about to ask you, okay? Just trust me here. And this is based, the question is based on what you said earlier about the level of corruption that you think exists in law enforcement. Are you generally distrustful of government and government agencies? What's your general, I guess your general view of that?
When I was young, I didn't have any distrust of them, and I completely trusted them. For many years of my life, if I had, I was in a strange city or town and I had a question, I would go to a police officer. And many times I would still do that. However, the level of corruption that I've seen in some of my investigations tells me that there is no police department that don't break the law every single day and every single hour. And I've watched it. I've watched police officers lie in testimony at traffic court. I've watched them do amazing things to people that they had no business doing, all for personal benefit or gain, or just to exert power, control, and influence. So
okay.
So I've seen that happen. And yeah, there's some really good ones out there, too. And if you talk to guys like, you remember Jack McLam and some of those guys, they said the same thing. You know, they wouldn't go back into it now because the rule sets are different and they can't do the right thing.
Okay, now let's get to the reason why I asked the question. Let's get to the reason why I asked the question. Let's say that down the road, a few years down the road, all of this becomes rather accepted, we'll say scientifically, or at least accepted to some level by the criminal justice system, the court system. All right, if that happens, now here you are, you're out there right here tonight talking about being able to do this projection of consciousness, and you're describing the various things you can see and hear and learn and know. Now, understanding this that's my opinion. This very high level of looking over the shoulder kind of thinking that goes on in this country now. Extremely high level of, we've got to protect against this and protect against that. It's all a matter of national security. Contemplate on the possibilities, and when we come back from break, I'll describe a situation. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with Jeff Harvey. Jeff, do you remember the description that I set up before the break?
Right.
All right. I want you to keep that in mind. We're going to let it percolate just a little bit. We're going to take this call, and we'll come back to that. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hello?
You're live on the air. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
My name is Virginia.
Uh-huh.
And I am calling from Massachusetts.
Virginia, are you a first-time caller?
Yes.
Well, you know what we do for first-time callers. We got to play a little applause for you. All right. Virginia, what's your question or comment?
Well, I have a few things to say if I have enough time.
Well, we got 3 minutes. Go ahead.
That's all? Okay.
Yeah.
I've had experiences ever since a very, very young childhood. To jump ahead, regarding what your guest is talking about,
uh-huh.
In the 70s, I took lessons from this man who claimed that he was a spiritual advisor, and he was going to teach people how to project themselves mentally.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, I took the class. I went there. First class, I went, boom, right down.
What does that mean, you went right down?
I think we lost her.
Hmm.
You hear me, Kevin?
I hear you. I don't know what happened.
Are you with us? I think she dropped off.
She did. You know what? I'm looking at the control panel on that phone line, and that phone line has been disrupted.
I'm so surprised.
Okay. Virginia, I didn't do it. Please, you may call back. You can try to call back in a few minutes. This phone line that you were on has been interrupted. It's been a while since they've done that kind of thing to me, but hey, there it is. Okay, interesting. Very interesting. All right. You and I will go on and talk. And let me say again, Virginia, please feel free to call back if that phone line comes back up. We'd love to hear. what you had to say, that's puzzling. I didn't do it. Okay, you and I will talk about the scenario I set up. And that is, at some point, when the courts are beginning to recognize this, as they eventually recognized DNA as evidence for court trials. When we get to that point, if some agent decides that for whatever reason Jeff Harvey needs to not be on the air anymore, and he goes to court and he says, yes, we've had some of our experts looking into Jeff, and he's a threat to national security. So we need a warrant to pick him up because he's been trying to scan the president and get classified information. How would you be able to defend against such a charge?
I wouldn't. I'd simply say absolutely.
You would?
Absolutely. Why would I be afraid of that? Why would I not tell the truth? Look, if they consider that illegal, fine. That's up to them. I'll just find a country that doesn't find it so reprehensible.
Okay.
But no, I would not deny it at all. I've targeted a great many people, and I intend to do even more.
All righty then. Let's go to the telephone and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hi, Brent.
Jeff, here's a question for you. It's hypothetical, but it's not, because I have a friend who we've been chatting off and on for about 6 years. We have never met, and all we have is very fuzzy pictures of each other. She has given me carte blanche to contact her telepathically, psychically, any way I can. How could I do it?
oh gosh, just take a picture of her, it doesn't matter. Try and get a recent one, but it's, you know, it does, that's not that important. What's important is that as you're looking at the picture, and first of all, like I said, do the tune-up procedures to get your nervous system working really well. You know, do the stroking of all those joints and everything and get them really fired up so you can feel that vibration. Then do the amygdala popping exercise that I showed you with the amygdala and the front lobes. Then focus on the picture, and then focus on your feelings about her, and try and get yourself into a nice high alpha state or a theta state. Either one will work. High alpha is very good because you're mainly in the right brain, and that's where all this work works. And if you use your amygdala exercise for this, just focus on the right amygdala and the right frontal lobes, pushing the energy out to there, because you just want the right brain working. Who cares what the left is doing? So that's what I would do. I would focus on her picture and then have a picture in your mind that you send to her while you keep your feelings in your heart about her, and just push that picture to her or a word, and then give her a call 10, 15 minutes later and say, okay, you get anything from me?
Okay, he got cut off as well.
Oh, that's okay. We'll still tell everybody how to do it.
Okay. Brent, sorry. Apparently, we're going to play ping pong here tonight. Okay, to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Ryan in Washington.
Hello, Ryan.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I have a question that for Jeff that is kind of off the topic of what you're talking about right now.
As long as it's not too far off the path.
Not too far off.
Okay.
But, Jeff, due to your electronic background, without going into too much detail, how do you think that they are able to, let's say that the previous caller was cut off by somebody who didn't want her to talk. How do you think that they are able to interject people's phone lines like that? How do they do that?
First of all, I happen to be a telephone tech from the Navy, and I was trained by them. But let's go past this a little further. First of all, the global elite run every major corporation, especially they work very hard at acquiring telecommunications companies, because when they control the communications, they control just about everything. So that's media companies, phone companies, Verizon especially. They are... Everybody thinks Verizon and AT&T are separate. I get a kick out of that. But anyway, they can do this because they own the companies. They have the software. They have the IT staff that set it all up. Absolutely child's play to do this. That's why the Internet companies, even though they've got proprietary protocols like Skype, they use their Skype channels, all of that stuff goes out in packets through the servers that are owned by these companies, so they can interrupt it at any point it goes across their network, decode the packets, play with the packets, or do whatever they want. I could take a packet conversation from Kevin and I on, let's say, a voice over internet line. I could take the packet apart, reinsert my information that I wanted in there, and send it back out. And you would get it on the other end with the information I put in, not what Kevin put in. And there are many, many devices out there to read those packets and see what's inside of them. Ethereal Trace is one of them out there to take a look, and there's quite a few others that will break those packets apart for you.
I kind of suspected that, but I don't have any reason. I never signed any security clearance, so I can say whatever I want, but... I kind of suspected that people that some of these phone companies like Verizon and Comcast, that they have moles working inside them that do all this, and that's how they do it. They work for these companies. That's what I thought.
That is correct. That's how it gets accomplished.
Well, that's confirms what I thought. That's all I really wanted to ask you. I'm not saying that the previous caller, it might have just been something Her phone line might have just died. I'm not saying that.
No, it was here.
She wasn't talking about.
No. It was here.
Oh.
No, listen, Ryan. It happened here.
Well, I believe Kevin. Yeah.
I'm looking at the console for that line, and it's powered up. Everything's fine, and blank. It all of a sudden it said no signal.
I suggest in the companies to do this do exactly the same thing I did when I infiltrated Verizon Wireless. They come in as an employee, but they're working for another company when they come in.
Well, I think I'll be dropping their service then, and they won't be having my business. But anyways, great show tonight.
Okay, thanks for the call. And let me say again to Virginia from Massachusetts, we did not cut you off. Someone cut our phone system off. It's back up now. There's no way I can tell you who did it, but it wasn't us. So, Virginia, if you would like to call back in, feel free to do so. It's been quite a while, Jeff, since we've had any interference like that. They've got to be training rookies. That's got to be what it is.
I think it's more they don't want this type of information out there and being trained, because these techniques, some of them are part of the mystery school trainings.
Really?
I know a fellow who is a Rosicrucian, and he told me personally that one of their particular degree rankings is specifically astral projection and this sort of thing.
Okay, but now this projection of consciousness, you said, is not the same thing as astral projection.
No, but they're so directly related because of the way the nervous system functions. They're just a different skill with the same set of equipment.
Okay. And so you're saying that the ability to do this is part of the training for some of the mystery schools, and particularly you happen to know, based on what you were told, that it's part of the Rosicrucian training.
Correct. And just remember, the difference between astral projection and consciousness projection is no different than the difference between making a piece of porcelain on a clay wheel versus digging a ditch. You're still using the same equipment, your hands, but you're using them in a different way to get a different result.
Okay, good analogy. Good analogy. The telephone number, ladies and gentlemen, is, and this works anywhere on planet Earth, 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. If you're outside of the USA and outside of Canada and you do not wish to make that international long-distance call, I have a flash message option for you on my website. Just go to kevinsmithshow.com and scroll down. When you see the picture about tonight's show, on the right side of that picture, you'll see a link that says flash message. And we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're on Final Approach, and we're talking with Jeff Harvey this evening. Jeff, Virginia has called us back. I was watching the control panel. Virginia, I didn't cut you off, dear.
Thank you.
I don't know what happened. Someone didn't want us to hear what you were telling us, I think. Okay, but you had said...
I'm sorry.
But you, look, you said that in the very first session, the guy did something, and it says you said you went down. What does that mean?
I was taught a method to go within myself so that I could mentally project to a chosen spot, a chosen area, and I could psychically view that area and to discern the buildings, the plants, whatever was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And in my first experience, I chose where my mother lived, which was out of town, quite a way.
Uh-huh.
And it was at night. I projected, and I saw the house, I saw the evergreen plants around the foundation, I saw the grass. All of a sudden, I see this little brown dog coming around the corner to the front of the building and just sniffing around the evergreens in front of the house.
Uh-huh.
And I'm watching it, and then the little dog goes back, and then the person conducting this practice, okay, we are going to come up step by step, whatever, however he wanted to do it. I don't want to get into the details on here.
Yeah, we need you to go ahead and kind of get us to the end of the story here so we can...
Okay, right now. So, he said, "You're amazing. This is your first attempt. You went so far that you can give all of these details. And I told you earlier, I hope before I was cut off,
uh-huh.
about I did not suspect that he was straightforward in his reasons for teaching people this."
Yeah.
Did you hear that, or was I cut off before that?
Yeah, we did not hear that.
Oh, God. All right, anyway, because I've been empathic all my life, and I've had various types of psi experiences all my life,
uh-huh.
I decided, okay, he taught me something, but he's not going to use me. And I did not have any further contact with this man.
Mm-hmm.
Later, I still practiced what I was taught. I got to the point that I could actually project myself states away to observe things. I am very ethical. I would never, never use my ability to invade another human being's body.
Mm-hmm.
I would never, never use my ability to invade a situation and actually harm someone. I don't understand why your guest thinks it's okay for the government to do this stuff.
Okay, let's find out. What do you think about that?
What do you think? Excuse me?
I said I definitely do not think it's okay to do that.
Okay, he said he does not think that's ethical for the government to do that.
But he stated earlier that, oh, he can just invade a person's psyche. I mean, go right into that person's body. That is invasion. That is, my God, that's worse than rape, don't you think?
I agree with you, Virginia. But
no matter how powerful my abilities ever became, I would never do that to another human being.
Okay, let's get his response to that.
Virginia, let me respond. I agree with you. That's not something you do. What I said was I can do that, and I have hit several targets, and I have hit targets that were not aware of what I was doing, but what I advocate is for people to get groups of friends who do agree to do this and to practice it.
Okay, Virginia, thank you for the call. We're almost out of time, and I want to ask this question. What if people get good at doing this with groups of friends, what's to prevent someone from doing it, as she described, as an invasion of someone else's mind?
Oh, absolutely, and she's quite right. Anybody can do that, and there's nothing at all to stop them from doing that unless the people start learning how to put up blocks and to be more sensitive to it and resistant to it. So, no, there's nothing to stop that from happening, and you and I both know it will. You know, little Johnny in high school, when he learns about it, he's going to be going over to little Susie to see what's cooking in her head.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is the stuff that will happen, and this is life. This is what we go through as a learning experience on how to be better people. Hopefully, the parents teach their children how to do this properly.
Well, I could see this changing the entire definition of what it means to be people. At the moment, that's being challenged on a daily basis in the courts anyway, and it's being challenged even more by laws that disregard our Constitution. And it's changing the nature, and it's changing the nature of what it means to be us, and it's changing the really the definition of what it is to be us. No one in 1950, if they could look at 2010, no one in America in 1950 would describe America in 2010 as free. And yet, there is this huge population of people who, what we live under now, they think that's freedom. And that's the definition of freedom that they have come to accept. The same sort of situation will happen in terms of if people in 2010 could take a look at 2050, when everybody's doing what you're talking about, none of us would say those people are free, independent people with freedom of choice. It's going to change the nature of what it is to be us.
It's just like if you're the New World Order and you're the global elite and you want children to accept what you are dictating is what the society will be shaped like, how are you going to do it? Well, it's very simple. If you're in charge of the institutions that teach the children, they only get what you give them, and they believe what you tell them, regardless of what their parents do, because you've got the programming in so tight that they literally are peer pressured to believe it. And
so,
that's what's going on today.
So do you see learning this ability? Well, we're at the end of the show. Let me just ask for a yes or a no on this. Do you see this ability as learning this as self-defense?
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks for being with us, Jeff. Stay on the line with me for just a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it. That's a wrap for this evening. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.